As a matter of fact, so let me see if I find my presentation. So, yes, so the principle I'm going to talk about is precisely the principle which Angélique quoted from Thomas Reed, namely the principle that the reliability of our natural faculties, natural epistemic faculties, should be presumed. And so there are several instances of this principle in the epistemology. In epistemology, starting with Thomas Reed himself, of course. So that's what Angélique quoted. So another first principle is that the natural faculties by which we distinguish truth from error are not fallacious. And we find this kind of principle of presumption of reliability in many authors, most of them inspired by Reed, like William Alston, and also in Plantinga. So I quote also Plantinga's version. There is, we might say, a presumption of reliability for properly functioning faculties. We are inclined, right or wrongly, to take it that properly functioning cognitive faculties, for the most part, deliver true belief. So, of course, this principle is a response to the traditional skeptical worry whether our epistemic faculties are reliable or not. And the view of this principle is not just that we should consider our faculties as reliable, but that we should accept their reliability as a principle, that is, as a presumption, and not as a conclusion of some argument of proof. Well, this kind of principle has been accepted by various philosophers at different places of their epistemology. So, for example, in Thomas Reed, you find here, this is the seventh principle out of a list of 12 principles of contingent truth. So it's somehow lost in the middle of many things. And my intuition is that this principle is or should be a rather central tenet of a good foundationalist epistemology. So, and there is in fact one tradition of philosophers from the 18th century to the beginning of the 20th century, for whom this tradition is a tradition where this principle holds center stage in the foundation of knowledge. So this is the theory, which is called the theory of the three primitive truths. So I will start my talk by presenting, by making this historical detour. I will present the theory of the three primitive truths, and then I will turn to a personal defense of the principle of the reliability of the natural faculties, which I call PRN. The second part would be to give a precise formulation of what I take to be the principle. Then I will show why we require the principle, such a principle, in our epistemology. And then what I really want to defend is a particular justification for accepting this principle. So this will be part four, how we can justify the acceptance of this principle. And then I consider some objections. So let me start with the theory of the three primitive truths. So again, this is a theory in which the principle of reliability of natural faculties has really is at the center of our foundation of knowledge. And this tradition of the three primitive truths is in a historical tradition that is almost unknown by all contemporary philosophers. What I call personally the Latin tradition of common sense. So every contemporary philosopher knows about the Scottish tradition of common sense, starting with Thomas Reed. What very few people know is that there is another somewhat independent tradition of common sense, which is written by authors in European universities writing in Latin textbooks. And this Latin tradition of common sense starts, in fact, before Thomas Reed, in an author who's called Claude Buffier, 40 years before Thomas Reed, and continued until the beginning of the 20th century. So this is in this Latin tradition of common sense. There are many authors in this tradition. I will concentrate only on three of them: Claude Buffier, the starter of the tradition; Jaime Balmes, a Spaniard; and Salvatore Tongiorgi, an Italian philosopher. So in this tradition, this tradition is very much a Cartesian, a post-Cartesian epistemology. So like Descartes, Claude Buffier accepted that the regress of reasons, the problem of the regress of reasons, must stop at some basic beliefs, foundational beliefs, or what he called primitive truth. And these primitive truths serve as foundations of knowledge. But unlike Descartes, Buffier didn't think that it was possible to construct all our knowledge on only on the principles of introspection, or only on the cogito. So here is what Buffier says. The certainty of the existence of external bodies cannot be ascribed to the inner sense, or to introspection. If we want to recover the certainty of the existence of external bodies, we must therefore trace back the certainty to another heading or rule of truth, which some seem to ignore, and which I will call the common sense, the common sentiment of nature, or as we ordinarily say, common sense. And I draw your attention to the fact that this quotation is from 1724, namely 40 years before Reid's Enquiry. So, according to Buffier, this grounding of common sense constitutes a second foundational source alongside with introspection, with Cartesian introspection, or inner sense, or sensus intimus in Latin. So there are basically two foundational sources of all beliefs, which then give later inferential beliefs, which we can ground upon them, introspection and common sense. So the structure of knowledge relies on two and only two pillars, Cartesian introspection on the one hand and common sense on the other hand. And of course, common sense is what allows us to trust the data of perception, like visual or auditive perception, about the external world. Now, this is Buffier's picture. Jaime Balmes added one important element to the picture. Namely, Balmes noticed that even Descartes did not ground his philosophy only on introspection and the cogito, but also on the logical truth, like the conditional truth that if something thinks, then necessarily it exists. So Balmes also accepted the pillar of common sense which Buffier had defended, but he presented it as a third pillar besides introspection and a priori reason, or what he called evidence. So in Balmes' vocabulary, there are in fact three means to perceive truth: evidence for the necessary truth, conscience for the truth of inner sense, like the cogito, and what he called intellectual instinct for the truth of common sense. So we have here the starting of the tradition of the three pillars of all knowledge. But we don't have as yet the doctrine of the three primitive truths, which was invented by Tongiorgi, the third author. This was invented as an elaboration on Balmes' theory of the three pillars, and in response to the most common skeptical challenge against foundationalism, namely the meta-epistemic challenge to foundationalism, which is, why should you trust the deliverances of your basic faculties? So, okay, you can stop the regress of reasons by recurring to basic faculties, but why should you trust the deliverances of the basic faculties? This is a meta-epistemic question. This is not the first-order question, for what reason do you believe some basic belief. There is no response to this first-order question. But this is a second-order question about the faculties themselves. And Tongiorgi starts with the response to the first two pillars, evidence and conscience. So for evidence, Tongiorgi's response is along Aristotelian's response, namely that all truth of reason somehow boil down to the principle of non-contradiction. And for the principle of non-contradiction, we have no other option but to accept it as a basic principle because, so he gives two reasons. First, because it cannot be established as a derivative truth, as a conclusion. because any proof of it would be circular. And second, because it is affirmed by anyone who tries to deny it or even to doubt it. So this is a famous Aristotelian response, defense of the principle of non-contradiction. Denial or doubt of the principle are self-undermining. And for that reason, this is a defense of the principle itself. So basically, or more shortly, Tongeorgi's response in defense of the trust of evidence as a basic source is that Aristotle has convincingly argued that it is self-undermining not to accept the principle of non-contradiction, that is, to deny or to doubt it. This is the response for the first pillar. The response for the second pillar is taken from Descartes, namely that all truth of introspection somehow boils down to the cogito, and for the cogito, we have no other option but to accept it as a basic principle. Why? For the same two reasons. First, because it cannot be established as a derivative truth. And second, because it is affirmed, it is still affirmed by anyone who denies or doubts it. Denial or even doubt of the cogito is still affirming the cogito and therefore is self-undermining. So what I find very interesting in Tongeorgi's response is that he uses Descartes' solution as something exactly along the same lines of Aristotle's response or defense of the principle of non-contradiction. And this kind of defense has been traditionally taken to be very strong dialectically in each case, in the case of the non-contradiction and in the case of the cogito. And Tongeorgi accepts this traditional verdict of success. But now we have a problem, because of the three pillars of knowledge, the first two rely on primitive truth that are protected, so to speak, or defended by a defense of self-undermining, so arguably a very strong defense, dialectically speaking. But what about the third pillar? And for the third pillar, why should we think that it is reliable? Why should we think that common sense or our natural faculties of perception, of memory, etc., are reliable? It doesn't seem that we can give the same answer here. After all, it is not self-undermining to raise doubt about perception, about the reliability of perception, or doubt about the reliability of memory. And so we are faced with the traditional, the really central modern problem, which is we seem to have good defenses for evidence or truth of reasons and for introspection, but then if we accept only those, we are committed to solipsism and we cannot get again the external world. And to this problem, Tongeorgi invented a solution which I find at least very elegant and probably also quite promising, namely, he managed to show that there is a solution to the problem, which is to the defense of intellectual instinct, which is exactly parallel to the defense of the first two pillars. So here is Tongeorgi's response. All truth of common sense, be it perception or memory or whatever other source of common sense, somehow boil down to the general principle of the reliability of our natural faculties. Namely, that our reason is truth apt or reliable. In Latin, aptitudo rationis ad veritatem a sequendam. And why should we accept this principle of the reliability of the natural faculties? For the same two reasons that we had for non-contradiction and for the cogito. Namely, one, because the principle cannot be established as a derivative truth. Any attempt to prove the principle of the reliability of faculties will be circularly presuppose the principle itself. And second, because the principle of the reliability of our faculties is affirmed by anyone who denies or even doubts this principle. Denial or doubt are self-undermining in that these attitudes will also have to make use of reason or our natural faculties. So This is the basis of the Tom George's solution. I guess you can see now why I was interested in this little historical detour. This is because this is a theory in which the principle of reliability of faculties has a huge foundational importance. It is, in fact, one of the three fundamental pillars of all human cognition. And I also find interesting Tom George's defense of the principle, namely the self-undermining defense. And this is an aspect I will try to defend in my own view when I present my own view. I will not try to defend all the aspects of the theory of the three primitive truth. There are aspects with which I don't think I agree, but at least I want to defend that we need something like the principle PRN, and I think that I also want to defend that there is a good self-undermining defense of the principle. Well, so much for a historical background. Let us turn now to a contemporary defense of the principle. So, let us start with a more precise formulation of the principle. So the principle which I will defend is the following, that we are prima facie justified to believe that our natural epistemic faculties are reliable. What do I mean by reliable? Well, not that they are infallible, of course. Our natural epistemic faculties are not infallible, at least most of them are not. What I mean by natural faculties, well, that there are epistemic practices entrenched in our very nature, like perception and memory, which are arguably entrenched in our nature as human beings. I want to defend that all our faculties are protected by this kind of prima facie presumption of reliability, not just some of them. But it's important to note that it's just prima facie reliability, or prima facie justification of the reliability. So it might turn out, it's compatible with what I'm saying, that it would turn out upon further evidence that some faculties are ultima facie undermined by further evidence. Okay, so that's essentially the principle I'm going to defend. Let me say quickly why I think that we require such a principle in epistemology. And because, well, some might think that we don't need to believe that our epistemic faculties are reliable because this is not something we think about, and in the natural, in the everyday practices, we just use our faculties without reflecting upon their reliability and so on. So basically, I'm not denying this. I'm not saying that everyone, like non-reflective people, children, and so on, need such a principle. So the question is, who really requires the principle of the reliability of natural faculties? Not children, and perhaps not the layman in the ordinary affairs of life, but anyone who entertains the reliability questions, namely anyone who seriously considers whether their epistemic faculties are reliable or not, will have to come up with the belief that they are. Otherwise, perceptual beliefs, for example, will be undermined. So when I ask myself the question, is sense perception, SP, is sense perception reliable or is memory reliable? If I come to believe that no, they are not reliable, then obviously this undermines my sense perceptual beliefs. And if I remain neutral in front of this question, if I remain in doubt in response to this challenge, this would also undermine my sense perceptual beliefs. Therefore, the only non-skeptical option confronted with this challenge is to come to fully and justifiably believe the proposition that sense perception is reliable, and more generally, that our natural faculties are reliable. So the principle is required maybe not by anyone, but by anyone who considers the question, so to speak. So this is a very strong requirement, nonetheless, for the philosopher, who is not ignorant of the skeptical discussion. Second, why do we require this principle as a principle? Couldn't we just accept that our faculties are reliable, but as a conclusion of some reasoning? Here, I won't defend in length the response. I take for granted the results of William Alston in his book The Reliability of Sense Perception, namely that any attempt to give a positive argument in favor, the conclusion of which would be that sense perception is reliable, will be either a failure or viciously circular. So there is no way to argument in favor of the truth of the principle, and therefore we have to accept it as a principle, something basic and not something derivative upon better known premises. So that's why I think we require the principle of the reliability of faculties, and that we require it as a principle, as a basic principle. But what I want to concentrate on is the precise defense of the principle. Maybe we require it, but can we satisfy this requirement? Is there any good reason to accept the principle as a principle? And here I want to defend Ton George's response, which is, it seems to me, original in the literature. And so the response of the self-undermining defense. And before that, I want to say why I'm not sympathetic to Thomas Reed's defense, which is a pragmatic defense. So let me say a word quickly about the bad response, so to speak, the pragmatic response adopted by Thomas Reed and William Alston in the wake of Thomas Reed. So Thomas Reed, when he's asked why he eventually believes the reliability of his faculty, of his reason, and so on, gives three reasons. He says, first, because I cannot avoid trusting my faculties, I cannot help it, and therefore, why should I make a vain attempt, he says. Second, because it would be imprudent to distrust the faculties which nature has given me. I cannot win in a contest with nature if I don't trust nature, so to speak. And third, because trusting these faculties in the past has revealed itself to be of good consequences. It has revealed itself to be successful. So these are three kinds of pragmatic responses, and my objection to all three replies is that because they are pragmatic reasons and not epistemic reasons, I think there cannot be reasons to believe the principle PRM. There can only be reasons to accept that our faculties are reliable, or to make as if, to act as if, our faculties are reliable. So there are reasons for action, acceptance or making as if, but they are not reasons for belief. They are not epistemic reasons. And if there are not reasons to believe that our faculties are reliable, then we're still in lack of any reason to believe the principle. Therefore, we cannot reasonably believe the principle. And therefore, it remains impossible to give a support to the sense perception beliefs themselves, and therefore the sense perception beliefs that there is here a table, that there are chairs, are undermined epistemically. Maybe we can make as if there are chairs and tables because we can make as if our perception is reliable, but we cannot believe that there are chairs because we cannot believe that our sense perception is reliable. So that's why I don't take the pragmatic response to be satisfactory, at least prima facie. I'll turn back to that later. And here comes the response which I defend, Ton George's self-undermining argument or defense. So I give the argument in a rather detailed form. I won't comment on all the details, but yeah, I still think it can be reasonably followed. First premise, when we are confronted with the reliability challenge or the reliability question about sense perception, there are only three options. First, we can believe, come to believe that our faculties are reliable. Second, we can come to believe that our faculties are unreliable. And third, we can come to doubt, to have doubt about their reliability. There are no other options. These are the only three possibilities. Second premise, any way to arrive at the belief two, the belief in unreliability, we'll have to use our epistemic faculties, our natural faculties, and therefore we'll be self-undermining and therefore unjustified. Third premise, any way to arrive at the doubt, three, doubt about the reliability, we'll also use our epistemic faculties and therefore we'll also be a self-undermining epistemic attitude and therefore an unjustified doubt. Fourth premise, the third attitude, the only one that is left, that is the belief that our faculties are reliable, is not self-undermining and can be a justified belief. From these four premises, it follows first conclusion C1, that when we are confronted with the reliability question about our faculties, there is only one epistemic attitude which is open to us and which is not necessarily unjustified, not self-undermining. And that attitude, this attitude is believing the reliability of our natural faculties. And from this conclusion one, I want to draw conclusion two, that the consideration of C1, that we have only one epistemic attitude that could be justified, constitutes an epistemic justification to adopt the only possibly justified attitude, namely, an epistemic reason to believe that our natural faculties are reliable. Because any other option would be self-undermining and unjustified. So that's the basic self-undermining defense. And I will consider now a couple of objections. So the first two objections, I think I have maybe not a knockdown responses, but at least responses that somewhat satisfy myself. The third question the third problem I find more problematic, so maybe I'll present it longer than the first two. And so the first objection is what I call the divide and conquer objection. So the remark is the following, that what is self-undermining, strictly speaking, is to believe that all our faculties are unreliable. Because, of course, we have to use some of our faculties to arrive at this conclusion. But it is not self-undermining to believe that some faculties are unreliable based on our use of other faculties. So maybe by a divide of different faculties, we could doubt one while relying on another. And of course, there are very classical instances of this strategy. Namely, we could grant a doubt of sense perception or a doubt of memory. We could grant it on evidence and introspection. And arguably, this is what Descartes and Hume make. Response. The response I use is the one which we find in Thomas Reid and also which is used by William Alston in the same context. And I call it the parity principle. This is the idea that we should treat our different faculties in parity and with the same attitude. So I start to grant that the conclusion of the self-undermining defense is only that some of our natural faculties must be reliable. This I grant. But if we accept a parity principle that prima facie, all our natural faculties should have the same reliability, from this principle plus the conclusion of the self-undermining defense, this still gives us a prima facie reason to believe any of our natural faculties. So here is Thomas Reed's version of the parity principle. Why, sir, should I believe the faculty of reason more than that of perception? They came both out of the same shop and were made by the same artist. And if he puts one piece of false ware into my hands, what should hinder him from putting another? So there is no prima facie reason to treat our epistemic faculties differently. And so any reason to think that some of them is reliable will be a reason to think that the others are also prima facie reliable. This will be defeasibly justified, of course, but prima facie justified. So that's for objection one. Objection two consists in saying that naturality is in fact an empirical characteristic, and that because of this, my solution, my defense, is still problematically circular. So here is the objection. So the objection asks, so what is, according to you, my reason to believe that sense perception is reliable? The response, because it is a natural faculty. But how do you know that it's a natural faculty? Well, it seems that the fact that it is a natural faculty can only be established empirically via an empirical inquiry on human nature. And of course, if I have to use sense perception or empirical evidence in order to show that sense perception is natural, I cannot use this in order to ground the reliability of sense perception. This is the traditional circularity problem, that we are using sense perception in order to arrive at the reliability of sense perception. Response. This response I found in another author of this Latin tradition of common sense, who is called Imre Janos from Budapest. So the idea here is that naturality of the faculties can be established or ascertained not only by empirical inquiry in the outside world, of empirical inquiry about nature of human beings, but also can be ascertained by introspection alone. I can know by introspection that sense perceptual beliefs are spontaneously and inevitably formed in me. I feel in myself the spontaneous and inevitable tendency to form perceptual beliefs. And this inevitability is a sure mark that this procedure, this epistemic procedure, is in fact a part of my epistemic nature. Conclusion, I can know by introspection that sense perception is part of my natural epistemic endowment, and so the naturalistic defense of sense perception is not circular. I turn now to the objection, which is to my, for me at least, the most problematic, and I'd be interested to have your views on that. I will just show where I stand presently. So the objection is that the self-undermining strategy which I presented is still a pragmatic strategy and not an epistemic strategy. Why that? Well, because the fact that believing not P and doubting whether P are both unjustified does not indicate that P is true. The fact that two faculties about two attitudes with respect to P are undermining or self-undermining shows nothing about the truth of P. Therefore, the self-undermining defense doesn't provide an indication of truth of the reliability of faculties, but only a way to achieve a certain desirable purpose, namely the purpose of avoiding unjustification, avoiding self-undermining. Because I want to avoid self-undermining, I turn to the only possibility I have at hand, namely believing the reliability, but this is just in order to achieve some purpose. It's not because I have indication of truth. Of course, the purpose has some epistemological content. My purpose is to avoid unjustification, so that's epistemic. But it remains a practical purpose and not an indication of truth. Another example of this kind of problem is another example of a pragmatic strategy motivated by epistemic purposes, is what Carrie Jenkins proposed as the truth fairy hypothesis. So here is the hypothesis. Suppose you start with no reason to believe that P is true and no reason to believe that it is false. The truth fairy is a very powerful being, and she makes you the following credible offer. You accept P is true, and she will make your epistemic situation very, very good overall. She will arrange for you to have many, many true, justified, knowledgeable beliefs, and very, very few false, unjustified, and unknowledgeable ones. However, she does not guarantee that your trust in P itself will have any particular epistemic status as a result of her actions. So if your epistemic purpose is to attain maximal justification, her offer makes trust in P permissible. But intuitions rebel at this thought, or at least it doesn't seem to be an epistemic reason in favor of P. It's just a pragmatic reason to believe P in order to achieve some form of internal justification or justification in your overall pattern of beliefs. But it's not an an epistemic reason. So in response, I want to make three short remarks. First remark, I don't know that whether I have a definitive response, but this is the way I see the problem, at least. First remark, the objection holds against all self-undermining defenses, not just the self-undermining defense against PRN, but also against principle of non-contradiction and the cogito. And here is my intuition pump. Isn't it clear that Aristotle's defense of the non-contradiction and Descartes' defense of the cogito do something in the direction of establishing or justifying us to believe their respective principles? That's my first intuition. Second remark. Even if I had to grant that the self-undermining defense is pragmatic in some sense, namely in the sense that it is not truth-directed, yet it's still of a very different sort of pragmatic response than the Reidian reasons. It's very different because it is a transcendental reason which holds for any belief system, as Alston has shown. Any belief system has to accept as a principle that their faculties are reliable, by the very logic of belief systems, and not by their accidental realization in a being with particular practical purposes like survival and so on. So it's a more epistemic argument in the sense that it's fundamental in the nature of epistemology itself and not in the accidental realization in practical purposes. Third remark, perhaps I'm bound to accept that self-undermining defenses are successful because they lead to acceptance rather than belief, or acceptance which is not so different from belief. Perhaps I should accept that. But if I should accept that it's eventually just a pragmatic reason, I would still maintain, or I still have the intuition, that the Reidian, that it is a kind of pragmatic reason which is much stronger than the Reidian pragmatic reasons. So I still have this intuition that it's a much more successful strategy, pragmatic strategy, than the Reid's pragmatic strategy, which relies on inevitability, vital or biological inevitability, and so on. So, and I stop here, and here are the references. Thank you for your attention.